Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we take a look at the director's cut of Zack Snyder's Watchmen, one leg at a time. My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
I'm Eric Nash.
And I'm Nathan Renley from the Calvin and Hobbes cast.
Welcome back, Nathan.
Thank you.
How's it going?
It's good. This alternate reality has got me a little bit looped out, but I'm happy to be back here and with Mr. New York, or whatever his name is.
Mr. New York. That's what they call him, yeah. So minute 63 starts with Lori entering Dan's apartment and ends with John getting dressed up for his televised interview. My first note is just particularly about Dan and how they've nailed his look in this minute. And the hair, the glasses, it's all perfect. Like, I looked at the book, you know, in these, basically in this section of the book, these panels. And he's got this brown cardigan over like a maroon shirt with a red tie, which looks horrible. But it's perfectly, you know, translated from the book. So it Patrick Wilson just looks, you know, perfectly dorky in this role. So shout out to the wardrobe department for putting this together. But
what are you saying? That's a bad look? That's what I'm wearing right now.
You look good in it.
She's shaken up, and that's conveyed pretty well. And Dan catches onto that, and you know, I mean, and she says, "I left John," and that right there is, you know, based on what he was just hearing on the news, you know, could be a bit concerning from a whole world perspective. Or even just the country. But they also both have these, I think, these more personal levels of why they're kind of shaken up.
And so yeah.
His reaction to hearing she broke up with John is pretty funny. I was watching this with my wife, and as soon as he said, "Oh," we both looked at each other and said, "What? No." It was exactly that tone. Like, "Oh, that's terrible."
That's funny. It is interesting. Like, he does say, "Oh God," like, and maybe it's something, you know, I think to Eric's point, like, is Dan thinking like, well, Dr. Manhattan's a powder keg and he's about to go on live TV and his girlfriend just broke up with him. So that could be bad.
This was in the previous minutes, but did Veidt have anything to do with them breaking up indirectly? Because every other part of the plan is like coming together. It seems like that would be a key part of it, but I don't know exactly what that would be. Was there anything subtle, like maybe like increasing the workload to where he had to split off into different people or something?
I don't believe there's any. I don't think that was a goal of anybody to drive them apart.
Because he's also there during that scene.
Yeah, we didn't really mention that he's on screen witnessing the whole time.
Should I come back later and you guys breaking up? Or
right, yeah. Awkward. I do, yeah, we didn't even really talk about Adrian being essentially present for that scene, but it's funny that he even added, like, offered, you know, that consoling line of, like, "Don't worry, John, she'll be back.
Don't worry, big guy."
Yeah.
No reason to go nuclear right now.
Yeah, not yet. Spoilers. Yeah, I really like the frustration, or yeah, the way she doesn't know what to do, you know, when she's talking about not knowing anybody else, not knowing why she's there, and not knowing anybody else. So adding to the fact that she's been, you know, isolated for so long, and, you know.
So she's been kind of kept away from the world, perhaps, by their relationship?
Yeah, I think just the nature of their relationship has driven them, you know, into isolation, you know, because he's only concerned with experiments, and, I mean, I don't know what he's been doing, you know, aside from working with Adrian to, like, you know, work on renewable energy sources and things like that. So I guess that's what he's been up to in the entire, well, I guess he's never really been retired. He's been working for the government. So
I thought of two things. Like, if you were married to someone that was working on the Manhattan Project, fittingly, or like, you know, Los Alamos Labs, how you'd have to keep so many secrets. But then also that superheroes have experienced things that other people never would, so they probably feel psychologically isolated, like astronauts that have walked on the moon or something.
Well, isn't it kind of like a celebrity kind of similar issue where, you know, just going out for dinner like she does with Dan earlier, but you know, and she does that because, you know, I think that she can't do that with Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
That he would just draw too much attention and they wouldn't really have a good dinner. Good time.
And that's why celebrities date each other a lot.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then they break up.
Common ground. Yeah, yeah. Well, it'd be tough to be with someone who's, you know, if two actors dating and if one of them is getting more, I don't know, notoriety or more, you know, popularity, I'm sure it'd be tough to be in that relationship of like, if one of them is being more sought after than the other, and then you get feelings of jealousy, and I'm, you know.
Like Chris Pratt and...
Anna Faris?
Anna Faris, yeah, or Will Arnett and Leslie Knope.
Yeah.
She became the more famous one in that case.
Right, yeah. I noticed in second 30 of this minute, there's what looks to be a stuffed white owl kind of in the living room, because it's like a kind of a wide angle, you know, shot of Dan and Lori. So you see a lot of the background stuff in the room behind them, and a lot of stuff in the foreground. And then there's also the framed photo of the Minutemen that we've seen pop up now. You know, kind of lost track of how many times we've seen the photo pop up, but Dan has a copy of it in, I think it might be sitting on top of his television. I'm not sure where exactly it was positioned, but does this minute feel like you're watching a play to anyone else?
Yeah, it does. It kind of feels, the dialogue's a little bit clunky right here, in my opinion. But then also, like, these two people are so boring. They're both sequels of other superheroes, like, yeah, their own identity, and they're just kind of
sequels. That's great.
Like, they couldn't even come up with their own superhero. I guess they wanted to, like, just inherit the costume and stuff, or, you know,
sure,
different things. But yeah, that it is kind of a interesting back and forth. It's almost a little bit soap opera-y.
Yeah. To me, it just felt like the dialogue and the performances were just felt very rehearsed and very theatrical. And they're not getting getting big with the. It's not full of drama and everything. It's just, I don't know, it almost that exaggerated talking about, you know, your relationship that I've seen in some stage, you know, performances, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right. It could be that projection of emotion that you see in the theater.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. I think this, so far, I actually think this might be my least favorite minute of the movie so far.
I'm glad to be here to talk about your least favorite minute.
It's really only in this, like, you know, this minute, really. It gets better from here, I think. But in, like, the movie's defense, there's nobody in costume. There's no talk of the good old days fighting bad guys. I found it's like it's just dialogue in a brown room, and it just feels very, you know, blah. I think
that's why they really, I mean, the only way it's elevated is how they overlap what they're saying onto the shots of John.
Yeah.
Starting that to get helps, dressed. Yeah. He gets halfway and almost dressed. And the one note I had about that really was just that, you know, and I know it certainly goes back to the book. The book does it pretty similarly. And, but really, I mean, with all his teleportation capabilities, like, can he just teleport the clothes onto him around him?
I thought about that too. Yeah.
There's kind of
they need to fly through the air first.
There's like a Cinderella vibe to him getting dressed.
Yeah, like you.
Bippity boppity boo.
Yep.
I kind of pictured like little tiny birds, you know, floating clothes through the air. Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of unintentional comedy when he holds up the bra when they're saying he doesn't remember like what people are like, why did it have to be the bra? Because he's about to get dressed too. So he's like, oh, this is, do I wear this? Is this
maybe
for,
I'll wear
for
this,
my
yeah.
body? No, it's not my shape.
That's straight from the book. Yeah, there's a panel with him holding up one of her bras.
What body part would go in these? He's looking at.
Well, if he just makes himself like a couple times bigger, maybe. He could put a couple things in him.
Sure. Yeah. For me, the bit of animation here doesn't really hold up. I find the way the shirt buttons up always looks really fake to me. I do think throughout the movie, most of the CGI and all those special effects tend to hold up really well still, but the shirt just always screams fake to me. So that's part of why I don't like the getting dressed in midair, or whatever.
So sometimes it might be like a stereotype, but if a man is getting ready for a thing and then the wife or lady will help him put on his tie or like tighten his tie. I've seen that in movies. It's never happened in real life to me, but he's replaced that. He's got control over all of everything. So he doesn't need to have anyone with him.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a symbol. I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah. Hard to, cause yeah, they could have just, he could have just teleported the clothes onto, materialized the clothes out of nothingness and, So part of me, it's like, I like that he dresses himself in real clothes. And yeah, if you had powers, you would do stuff like this, I think. And
well, it's like he's putting on his human costume.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Guess I have to wear pants.
And also he can't design really cool suits, so he has to get one off the rack. He can't imagine something so fashionable.
Yeah.
Well, he had maybe, or unless someone kind of gave him the idea, he had the V kind of Speedo, the V-shaped Speedo, and then before that was more like a unitard.
What'd you call me?
Yeah, you know it.
Yeah.
But going back to what you were saying, though, about kind of the a woman there helping him with the tie. And that's when she's saying, we're hearing her say, people are just shadows in a fog. So to him, it's kind of like, a shadow, you can keep going on your own without a shadow. We're not relying on a shadow we project.
Yeah. Well, and that just made me think of thinking of her line about the real world is like walking through mist and people are shadows. So we were talking the other day, I think Monday, about the way he sees her, and does he see her or does he see, like I said, like atoms and molecules and things like that. So maybe that's kind of what she means, like that the real world is like mist, or it's like a fog and whatever, kind of the words she uses, and maybe that is kind of what it's like for him. He doesn't see he doesn't see people. He just sees shapes. So,
Well, and just, he's seeing things for maybe even how they are. He doesn't imagine the whole construct of personalities and people. He's just seeing what's really there, which is like chemical reactions and matter and energy. So that would be seeing things in, sometimes there's like a loop, and like seeing things as really simplistically or seeing things really complexly are almost like the same, and actually seeing them with value is like in between those two. It's like the other side of the circle. The two extremes are actually really similar to each other.
Nathan, do you remember, have you read Watchmen?
Yes, I have. I have read Watchmen.
Can you remember the first time you read it or what you thought of it the first time?
It was either right before or right after I saw the movie in theaters.
Okay.
Which I can't remember why I don't remember that. I think it was right after, actually. I think I would have brought too much baggage into the theater if I... I mean, I think I would remember having expectations in the theater, which I remember not really having, other than seeing the trailer, I think, with Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And what a great trailer. That Watchmen trailer was so good. So, yeah, I watched it afterward. I have to admit, I didn't get all the levels, and as such, I ended up sticking more with like the surface level stuff that's in the movie rather than Voyage of the Black Freighter or some of like the journal entries and stuff like that. Even though I know sure. to fully appreciate Watchmen, you have to have all those pieces. I did watch the animated thing of the Black Freighter though.
Oh, okay.
The standalone one that was before it was mixed back in.
Sure. Right on. All right. Can you make it back tomorrow?
I think so.
All right.
Ride on a bus full of internet bandwidth.
Well, all right then. We will be back tomorrow as well for minute 64. So until then, who watches The Watchmen?
We do.
We do.
Watchmen are over.